Welcome to the WebMD Health Discovered podcast. I'm Dr. Neha Pathak, WebMD's Chief Physician Editor for Health and Lifestyle Medicine. Today, we're unraveling the threads of a common issue that hides behind our everyday wardrobe, fast fashion. Many of us are already acquainted with the ethical and environmental concerns associated with this industry. But what about the potential for toxic chemicals lurking in the fabric of our clothing? Often when we think of toxic exposures, our minds go to household cleansers or environmental pollution. But there's growing evidence that we may be affected by toxic chemicals in clothing fabrics as well. What materials are a safer alternative to replace in our wardrobe? Starting with our closet, how can we audit, edit, and refit our wardrobes for both sustainability and health reasons? In this episode, we'll go through a step-by-step guide on how to consume fashion more sustainably and in a more healthy way. Here to walk us through this important topic is our guest, Alden Wicker. Alden is an award-winning journalist, sustainable fashion expert, and author of To Die For: How Toxic Fashion is Making Us Sick and How We Can Fight Back. Welcome to the WebMD Health Discovered podcast, Alden.
Hi, thank you for having me.
I am really so excited to talk to you. I have so many questions, but before we dig into those, I'd like to ask about your own personal health discovery. What was your aha moment around the environmental and health impact of fashion, and what inspired you to write To Die For?
That's a great question. I actually didn't make the connection between fast fashion and the fashion industry in general and my health until I was a decade into writing about fashion and sustainability. I got into writing about fashion and sustainability because I'm a product of the food movement from the early 2010s. It really transformed my own health to know where my food was coming from. And it seemed that for food, at least, sustainability and health went hand in hand. So I started looking around at the time and thinking about if it's important where we get our food from farms, from regenerative practices, local farms, it's probably also important where we get other things from. And that includes beauty products and also fashion. The big difference for me was I wasn't seeing the connection between the types of clothing we buy and our health for a very long time. It just seemed like something that impacts other people, like garment workers in India or the people in the communities around or that participate in the manufacturing of plastics or dye houses, things like that. That all changed in 2019 when I heard about the fact that Delta Airlines attendants were suing the manufacturer of their uniforms because they said their uniforms were making them really sick. And at the time, I had never heard about fashion causing health issues. I think I was like most people in that I thought that when you look at the tag and it says 43% polyester and 57% cotton, that was a full accounting of what is in fashion. But as I looked into it more, trying to figure out, was it true that the uniforms were making them sick? And it was. What was in these uniforms? And if it was affecting flight attendants, was it affecting normal people as well? And the answer I found to that after a year and a half of research is yes, unequivocally, the chemicals that are in clothing are also affecting the health of normal people like you and me.
Thank you so much for sharing your story. And a lot of what you say resonates with me. So I'm a primary care doctor. I'm an internal medicine primary care doctor, but recently I identify as a lifestyle medicine primary care doctor. And so lifestyle medicine is really sort of thinking about the foods we eat, our physical activity, our sleep, our stress management, and the sort of environment around us. So the same way that I would talk to a patient about their smoking habit, more and more a lot of us are thinking about, well, what other environmental toxic exposure should we be thinking about in our patients? And whenever we're having these types of conversations in the exam room, what I always struggle with and what I'd like to start our conversation with is really sort of this balance. And you talk about this in your book, too, this balance between alarming people, overwhelming people with what they should be doing, and what we want to do, which is empowering people or helping people feel like they have some agency in making healthier choices if they're able to. So in order to strike that balance, I'd like to start first with the why. I think most of us understand the why around how fast fashion impacts the environment and some of the ethical concerns. So let's start there before we get into the why around the personal health concerns.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm really glad that we're going to get into that balance between what could be perceived as fear-mongering and what could be perceived as fact. So yes, it's been well known for a really long time now that the production of fashion is very bad for the environment and also very exploitative to the people in the supply chain. So for 150 years, people who are working to create and dye and process and sew fashion have been subject to really terrible health conditions from being exposed to the fumes that come from throughout this process, or just really hazardous working conditions where their bodies are being broken down by working long hours, bent over sewing machines, not having adequate access to the bathroom or bathroom breaks, just like all the things that you hear about when you think about a sweatshop or the effluent that comes out of these factories that's contributing to rivers and whole watersheds being functionally dead because they're so poison and black with all of the effluent that comes out of leather tanning, dye houses, etc. Over a decade ago, Greenpeace started highlighting this. First, they started with doing samples that were coming out of factories in China and showing all of these different toxins that were showing up in these rivers. And then they turned and said, look, we're also finding all of these hazardous chemicals in fashion, both in adult fashion and in children's fashion. And so we started hearing about how fashion could have these hazardous substances back then. But then worse news sort of overshadowed that and pushed it out of the way when the Rana Plaza garment factory complex in Bangladesh collapsed in 2013 and killed over 1,100 workers just because they were forced to come to work and make $5 tops for global brands. And so everybody forgot about the hazardous clothing and they started thinking, rightly so, about the labor conditions in places like Bangladesh and other developing countries. But the purpose of my book was to say, no, actually, this is a problem for garment workers. And whatever is happening in the supply chain, those chemicals that are being used that are making garment workers sick are staying on the clothing and being imported straight to our closets, where those chemicals are also getting into our bloodstream and affecting our health as well. And you'll see similar skin issues affecting garment workers and high-end consumers who live in California.
So can you talk about some of these particular chemicals of concern? What are some of these specific chemicals and what are some of the associated health risks that you learned about in your research?
So there are chemicals or substances that everybody knows are hazardous. So in recent years, tests of children's clothing have found lead and phthalates, which are endocrine disruptors. There's also been tests of polyester spandex workout clothing from large brands, hundreds of large brands, showing that they have BPA, which is another hormone-disrupting chemical that has been linked to several types of cancer, developmental harm, all the things that hormone-disrupting chemicals do. You also have dyes, especially certain types of dyes that are known immuno- or skin sensitizers. So they could cause a rash or other, you know, skin problems when they're touching your skin all day. Those problems tend to show up a few days later, I found. So it's a little bit hard to identify, like, where is this rash coming from? You also have carcinogens that show up on clothing. It just runs the entire gamut. There's about 40 to 60,000 chemicals used globally in commerce, and most of them, the majority of them, have not been tested for safety. And most of them, or a lot of them, are found on clothing. And clothing can have some of the most complex chemical profile of any consumer product you or I can buy. you can identify through tests hundreds of different chemical substances on a piece of clothing. And that's probably not even the full list because it would be impossible to test for every single thing that's in a piece of clothing. One researcher said, oh, we've run these certain tests that can show the number of different substances and chemical profiles, and there's a lot that we can't even identify in there.
Why is it that we haven't required more information being shared with consumers about other types of byproducts or chemicals that may be in our clothing?
That's such a good question. It's one I've asked myself many times. And I think it goes back to a story that we've been told about, well, you don't eat your clothing, so it doesn't matter what's on it. And those labels that are on clothing, they're not meant to provide information to the consumer about allergens or health impacts or ingredients. They're just a label that tells the customs people how high to tax the product. So anything that's under 5% of the product does not have to be listed. And 5% is a lot when you're talking about the types of chemicals, things like PFAS, that class of carcinogenic forever chemicals. You can't see, but I'm air quoting forever chemicals because they last forever. They accumulate in our blood. Very scary class of chemicals. A lot of these hormone disrupting chemicals do damage at parts per million or even parts per billion. And there's no legal requirement for a brand to tell you what's in the durable water repellent that they're using or what they use to make your product stain repellent. So we're sort of left guessing. I am hoping that's going to change because more and more research is coming out showing that not only are there these known hazardous substances on our clothing, they come off into our house dust where we can ingest them. We breathe in the volatile organic compounds that are wafting off of our clothing. It doesn't make sense to say it doesn't matter, we don't eat our clothes when we were talking about baby clothes, for example. They do put their clothing in their mouth, but we are all ingesting microfibers every day. And whatever has been put on that clothing is on those microfibers and we are ingesting them. We're also wearing these things next to our skin. Recent research came out showing how sweat is particularly good at pulling hazardous substances out of plastics. And so when we sweat in some of this clothing, that's pulling those chemicals out. And depending on the chemical, that can be absorbed into our skin. And then on top of that, these dispersed dyes, the types of dyes that are used to dye synthetic clothing, are the most prevalent type of skin sensitizers. They're known to be skin sensitizers and by dermatologists who do these patch tests. And yet a lot of primary care doctors do not ever think to ask their patients like, okay, you're having these skin problems. Like, what are you wearing? It usually goes back to lotion or maybe your detergent. But, you know, this thing that we wear on our skin every day or the sheets that we sleep in, those should be included in those questions as well.
Let's talk about people that actually come in with a health concern like you were mentioning. So someone, a child with eczema, or you have dry skin, or you're noticing rashes. What are some of the things that we should be talking about and counseling our patients about? Or if you're listening, what should you be looking for in your closet to try to start editing out?
Yeah. And I love that you brought up counseling because there actually is a really good connection here. I've started talking about the difference between natural and ultra processed fashion. I know that, you know, the federal government is going to start thinking about whether to change their recommendations to tell people to reduce their consumption of ultra processed food. And I think the same should apply for fashion, right? So if we're talking about various plastic or synthetic products, those are more likely to have these hazardous or hormone disrupting chemicals in and on them. So polyester, nylon, acrylic. And then you get into sort of the things where if your great-grandparents wouldn't recognize it, or they would be like, whoa, what is happening with that thing? If you see things that are like easy care, stain resistant, wrinkle-free, neon colors, anti-odor, all of these different things are achieved with chemical finishes put on the fabrics. And so if it has, just like with ultra-processed food, it's usually branded, it, you know, it might be this sugary cereal that says like vitamin D added, heart healthy because of whole grain or whatever, but it's still ultra processed. if you see these branded, fancy, or just like futuristic looking textiles, those are probably achieved with a layer upon layer of chemical finishes. So I usually tell people they should be looking for natural products, no marketing promises, right? And a lot of times they're just a way to charge more. They're not even that effective or good value for the shopper. Avoid fragrance laundry products and definitely avoid ultra fast fashion brands. So those random brands you see on Amazon, a brand that you've never seen before, super cheap, they advertise to you on social media. Those are very dangerous because nobody is watching over them to make sure that, for example, they don't smell like gasoline because they're getting shipped straight out from a factory that isn't being held accountable for the way they use chemicals or dyes. And it's getting shipped straight to you and not even Borders or Customs is opening that package to look at it because it's just one little package among millions that they're not required to inspect. So those are some of the main things that I tell people. And if I can, I'd like to go back to the types of people that might be affected by fashion. So we've mentioned people with eczema or persistent contact dermatitis, right? Or even atopic dermatitis, right? Because what I've said before is that a lot of times these rashes can show up 3 days later. So it seems like a mystery, but if you're paying attention, you might notice it always shows up after you wear this certain thing or you wear synthetic clothing. Other people that might benefit from thinking about their clothing. So if you're the type of person who is looking at the ingredients on your beauty products or personal care products, great. You should also be thinking about how you can reduce your exposure through what you wear.
Can you give us some information about refitting our clothes? So how do we refill our closet? Are there resources, places that we can go to help us identify products that are safe so that we're not necessarily feeling like, well, we're just being greenwashed anyway? So what are some of the best resources that you use?
There aren't a lot of resources out there. And so once I wrote this book on my website, ecocults.com, we started revamping our shopping guides and not just be about sustainability, but to be about non-toxicity. And it's really important to me to get this right because, like you say, there is greenwashing out there. And recently, we actually had to strip one very popular organic brand from our site because I got a report from a reader that she'd had a really strong allergic reaction to opening a large shipment from this brand. They were certified organic. They do mostly cotton. And because she has a chemical sensitivity born out of having a toxic mold exposure in her home, she's very sensitive to scented products. And, you know, she opened this box and this waft of chemicals came out and she had this allergic reaction. So we ended up looking into it. We found many more reports like that. And so we stripped them off the site and we're very, very thoughtful because we know this is, it's not just a nice to have the way sustainability could be for some people, but it's a safety issue and it's a health issue. So we're very conscious about guiding people to underwear brands and non-toxic brands in general, showing them affordable brands you can get at the mall that have strong chemical management policies. So there's a lot of resources there. And, you know, you don't have to throw out your entire closet at once. I mean, if you are the kind of person who is very much struggling with reactions and your quality of life is severely degraded, then yeah, maybe you do want to put everything in a plastic bag and put it in the garage. But you can start small. I would say start with the things that touch your body and that you wear the most. So underwear, your sheets. We spend a lot of time in our sheets. T-shirts and pajamas, workout clothing, things that which you sweat in. Those are things that you should try to replace first with natural, non-toxic, certified, safe clothing. So you can look for Okotex as a label. You can look for Blue Sign as a label. I don't think GOTS Organic by itself is enough, but there's some companies out there that really look at this holistically and they say, we have Okotex, we have organic, we also know our suppliers, we work with our suppliers, you know, we only use natural materials. There's a lot of different things that these companies can do to ensure that their clothing is safe for you to wear.
that is really helpful and actionable information. So I'd love to close out our time together with any other key points that you'd love to share with us with regard to something we could do starting today or starting tomorrow to audit and edit our closets so that they're healthier and more sustainable.
I love that you started this whole conversation off by saying that this should be empowering, and it absolutely should be empowering. And I think one of the most empowering things you can do is disconnect yourself a little bit from the marketing social media machine that says, buy, 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 new, new, new all the time. Get off those newsletters, get off of social media if you can, all those TikTok influencers pushing the latest Amazon product, and just buy less, buy fewer things that are better for you, quality over quantity. I think it's not just good for our physical health, but also for our mental health to have an edited closet where we wear everything and we enjoy everything and we feel good in everything we're wearing, both aesthetically and physically.
Well, I just want to thank you so much for being with us today. I'm definitely taking home a lot of points that you've shared with us today. We've talked with Alden Wicker about a step-by-step approach to thinking through our fashion choices, even if it's just us doing what we can, where we are, with what we have, to be more intentional or mindful of our future purchases. And when it comes to the impact on our health, let's try to avoid the overwhelm and just focus on making each choice a little healthier. To find out more information about Alden Wicker, visit aldenwicker.com. Thank you for listening. Please take a moment to follow, rate, and review this episode on your favorite listening platform. If you'd like to send me an email about topics you're interested in or questions for future guests, please send me a note at webmdpodcast@webmd.net. This is Dr. Neha Bhatak for the WebMD Health Discovered Podcast.